Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking why prenups are for lovers with Aaron Thomas.
Yeah, so I'm guessing that the title of this episode may have come as a shock to a lot of folks out there. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you may have picked up on the fact that Joel and I were not actually big fans of the prenuptial agreement, but maybe our guest today can change our minds. We are joined by Aaron Thomas. Aaron is a graduate of Harvard Law, who also happens to live in our old neighborhood back in Atlanta, little EAV. Shout out there. Aaron has decades of experience, and his clients range from NBA Hall of Famers to the little couple that you know who lives down the street. He founded prenups.com, and he's recently published a new book, The Prenup Prescription, where he argues that a proper prenup can not only protect, but actually improve your relationship. That's what we're going to be talking about today. So Aaron, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Really happy to be here.
Yeah, no, we're excited to have this conversation, Aaron, and like Matt alluded to, it's been something that when we get asked about it, we don't necessarily have the same take, but I will say I was convinced in many ways reading your book and hearing what your arguments. But the first question we ask everyone who comes on this podcast, we want to know what your craft beer equivalent is. Matt and I, we like to splurge on tasty craft beer that can be expensive, but we're also doing the right thing. We're saving and investing simultaneously. So what's that splurge look like in your life?
Yeah. For me and my wife, our big splurge would definitely be travel. We set money aside for it specifically every year, try to really make an effort to take trips. And we, you know, are frugal in a lot of other ways. We drive our cars until they're dragging down the street, and, you know, we're not big shoppers.
Yes.
You know, I'm a brown bagger, you know, when it comes to lunch, but travel. Yeah, that's our one big thing.
Aaron is a man after my own heart, taking those leftovers to work.
That's right. Matt, literally, that's his number one money saving tip, is eat your leftovers, right?
It's just such a, there are so many unnecessary expenses that occur, and maybe a little bit less as more folks are working from home, but you go out to the office and then you're trading the most affordable way to enjoy lunch, which is eating the food that you've already purchased and that's already been prepared for you, to the most expensive way, which is going out to lunch with folks. But I love it, Aaron. Thanks for sharing that. And let's go ahead and just completely dive into talking about prenups today. I'm actually not sure what this says about the romantic sensibilities of Americans, but there's a growing acceptance of prenups. I'm sure you probably saw and have seen this data, but there is a Harris poll. They found that exactly 50% of Americans now say that they at least somewhat support the use of prenups, which has risen quickly compared to previous years. Millennials are 5 times more likely to get a prenup than 12 years ago. Why do you think this perception is shifting so fast? Why are folks just so much more open to the idea of prenups?
Yeah, I think there's probably a few things at play here. One is for millennials and, you know, kind of the cohort of people who are getting married today, they saw their parents go through probably the biggest, you know, the highest divorce rate period of the 1980s here in the U.S. and saw the strife that came from that, all of the, you know, money spent, you know, how long the litigation lasted, and they're saying, you know, no way am I going to, you know, end up in that kind of position that I saw, you know, my parents, older generations. And then I think there's also just kind of like a difference in a generational difference in the way that they look at marriage, and that, you know, not that it's not romantic or not that they're, you know, expecting to get divorced, certainly, but that, you know, practicality kind of wins out and that it's just kind of the smart thing to do. A lot of the stigma has resided when it comes to prenups.
Part of that has to do with the fact that young folks are getting married later and later in life, right? And so they've built up more assets. So when you get married at 26 versus 36, there's a big difference in kind of what you've been able to achieve in your career. Maybe you've got a rental property or two. You've certainly got more money, hopefully, socked away in your retirement account. So does that kind of change in stage, life stage of when people are getting married, does that impact kind of how they feel about prenups and their willingness to partake in one?
Totally. That is a huge part of the difference. You know, when you look at kind of the difference of last generation and this generation, like you said, it is right about 10 years difference in the age that we're getting married in today's day and age than our parents or our grandparents' generation. So, you know, in the 1960s, when a couple got married, the average age of marriage was about 21 years old. And a couple back then had very simple finances. So they were likely to have, you know, zero, maybe one bank account between the two of them. Credit cards didn't really exist. 401ks hadn't been invented yet. You could still work your way through school. So there wasn't kind of the six figures of student loans type situation. So, you know, the couple getting married in, you know, say the mid-1960s or 1970s, it was like a startup. You know, you're starting from completely from scratch and two people are coming together and moving in together and building their life together. Whereas you compare that to today's couples who get married on average at age like 30, and each spouse is likely to have 4 or 5 bank accounts, 3 or 4 credit cards, a retirement account or two, a car with a loan against it, maybe a condo with some equity, maybe a small business, right? And so it's so much more complex. You know, if the couple in the 60s was a startup company, the couple getting married today is like a corporate merger, right? And you wouldn't do something of that magnitude without taking a little more seriously and putting some more thought and planning into it.
Which I totally get. And I'll readily admit, I think that's a part of my own personal bias. The fact that my wife and I, she was 21. We were very young, had basically nothing to our names, and everything that we have created, it's something that we did together. We want to talk a little bit about marriage. I guess that's what prenups are all about, right, to a certain extent. But marriage, just generally speaking, like you talk about just the legal realities of it. And I'm curious if any part of you just thinks that, like, going through the legal marriage process, like, does any part of you feel that that's kind of outdated, or that things are better off now that fewer folks are getting married? I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, I think my views on this have evolved a little bit. You know, I always looked at marriage kind of, you know, traditionally. My parents just celebrated 57 years together. My wife's parents Wow. are still together. And so, you know, I've always, you know, personally looked at marriage as like a lifelong commitment, as a positive thing for society and for myself personally. I'll tell you, though, you know, being a divorce lawyer will scare you a little bit when it comes to marriage. I mean, I started practicing family law, you know, many, many years ago. And after a few years of watching what divorce really does to people and does to families. I started warning friends and family and anybody who would listen against marriage. You know, not the commitment, you know, sure, get committed, you know, have a big party, wear a white dress, change your last name, move in together, but don't go through the actual legal relationship, you know, the legal step of getting married, because people don't know what they're signing up for, you know, what the legal, you know, aspect of it is. Obviously, I've, you know, changed my view on it. I'm now, you know, happily married myself. I think that there is a way to do it correctly. I just think that it is much more complex than it used to be.
So what are people signing up for that they don't know they're signing up for then, I guess? Because I think you're right. Like reading your book, thinking through all this stuff, I was like, why do people get married in the first place then? And you're like, you're right. Part of me wants to say all these other benefits of a lifelong partnership, but why does it have to be marriage, at least in the state-specific sense, the fact that you're signing up for all these kind of legal obligations?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, what getting married is, and I call it the biggest financial decision that you'll ever make. You know, a lot of people think it's, you know, buying a house or starting a business, but getting married touches so many parts of your financial life. It really is the biggest financial decision you'll ever make. And from the day that you get married forward, every dollar that you earn, that very first paycheck that you get after the date of marriage, is considered marital property. And so it no longer belongs just to you. Everything belongs to you as a couple. And this, it really doesn't matter whose name is on a bank account, whose name is on a piece of property, whose name's on a retirement account or a credit card. It's all considered, you know, one pile of finances from the day that you get married. And a lot of people don't figure that out until they are in, you know, unfortunately, a divorce lawyer's office years down the road, and they're saying, what do you mean he wants half of my retirement? What do you mean she wants half of the house? I kept it in my name only, and I paid the mortgage every month. And I would have to explain to people that, well, once you were married, that was no longer just your money. It was y'all's money. I mean, you tell them from the South. It was, you know, that's money belonged to the two of you. And so there was a lot of unintended consequences and things that people owned prior to marriage getting commingled accidentally. You know, people are really in need of like some clarity in terms of what it is they're signing for, signing up for, in my opinion.
I think there probably does need a good bit more counseling, premarital counseling, right? Where folks do, they are able to enter into those relationships with their eyes wide open. And it's interesting too, though, how you've sort of changed your tune a little bit. And I'm curious if you're a fan of marriage now that you are happily married and you're like, well, I got to root for the home team, right? So there's that. But then I'm curious too, have you seen the Melissa Kearney? So she's an economist, and a lot of research has come out recently regarding just the power, the advantage that two parent households have, in particular when it comes to raising up children, right? It's not only like a financial advantage. It's also kids don't get in trouble at school. They're less likely to be arrested. They're more likely to actually complete school. So some of those behavioral issues kind of melt away a little bit as well, because I feel like that, you know, faced with this new research and data, which surprisingly there hasn't been a ton of up until recently, it kind of, in my mind, puts marriage in particular in a new light. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I am familiar with Kearney's work, the new book about the two-parent household and all the advantages come from that. I mean, I think a lot of us, we know kind of anecdotally and intuitively how many advantages there are, but seeing the data, it really is compelling. And, you know, my kind of reluctance when it came to marriage didn't have anything to do with, you know, being scared of the lifelong commitment and all the advantages that come from an intact household. I wanted those things for myself. It was really fear of messing it up. It was fear of ending up in a divorce. And, you know, in my view, a messy divorce was best avoided at pretty much any cost. You know, I don't think that's that controversial of a statement to say that you should do whatever you can to avoid a messy divorce. And, you know, there's two ways to do it, right? One is not to get married, and two is to try very, very hard to keep your marriage together. And then, you know, a third would be, you know, put yourself in a position so that if your marriage does come to an end, that it is not kind of the expensive nightmare year and a half of litigation in a very public courtroom that I witnessed as, you know, a divorce litigator.
Yeah. Sure. No, I mean, the older I get, the more I've seen couples that I thought I would have like bet money early on. There's no way that marriage is going to dissolve. and things happen, right? And it's really sad to watch as a friend, but it's also sobering, right? To say, like, I'm doing my best here in my marriage, but and I'm hoping and praying, right, that like we're able to stick it out for the long run, just like that's what you want, Aaron. But you also see the sad reality of kind of what happens in our culture, and it's not half of divorces, but it's somewhere close to half of marriages that end in divorce. So I guess my question to you is, what do you do on the front end, right? The getting financially naked sort of thing at the very beginning. What sort of things need to be discussed as you're dating, as you're like working towards engagement, thinking about marriage, starting to talk about that stuff? What needs to be put on the table on the front end?
Yeah. Great question. I am, and that's where you have to start, is at the very beginning, you know, before you even get married. And I am an advocate of full disclosure. Due diligence is what a lawyer might call it, right? Where you get completely, you know, financially naked with your spouse, which is sometimes more difficult than getting physically naked with your partner. But by literally putting everything on the table in writing, in black and white, that means creating a net worth statement for yourself and for your spouse so that there are no surprises, trading that information. And I find that just that step alone, you know, number one, it's something that a lot of couples haven't done because there's no kind of natural time to say, hey, by the way, I've got 20 grand of credit card debt, or, you know, I haven't saved as much for retirement as I wish I had. But it's kind of, you know, you get a little bit of amnesty because, okay, we're planning our life together. We need to, you know, be completely transparent in terms of what we're bringing in. But it will also spawn what I think are very necessary conversations about your habits, you know, how you view money, what your kind of relationship with money growing up in your household. You know, do you like to carry debt on credit cards? Do you pay everything off, you know, month to month? What's your investment strategy? And, you know, we talked about how much more complex people's finances are when they get married because we're getting married older. But the other aspect of that is we're coming in with a decade or more of financial habits that we've built up on our own since we left our parents' household. And sometimes that can be the more tricky thing to combine than just the bank accounts and the credit cards.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, I guess on that note, this is kind of earlier on in your book, but you say the financial dynamics within a marriage actually dictate the personal dynamics of that marriage. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yes, the, you know, how your financial structure is set up can say a lot about what your marriage looks like. And so, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, I did a divorce for a couple where the husband worked, had a good job, made, you know, 200 grand a year, and his wife was home helping raise their two children. And he made that kind of money. He made 200 grand a year, and he gave her an allowance of $300 a month. And without knowing anything else about that couple, you could probably intuit some
right
other aspects
of
their,
you know, this
relationship.
Yeah.
The word allowance
doesn't sound great when we're talking about a husband and spouse relationship there, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Good. I mean, there was this really unequal power dynamic. She felt powerless. She felt trapped. He was lording over her. And, you know, if there's one thing that I've learned, it's, you know, two spouses living in the same household, but in different socioeconomic classes is a recipe for disaster. That is not going to work.
It just feels so weird, even just the way, I mean, everything about what you said about that couple felt bad. The allowance, the actual amounts, the fact that there might be a couple and they're in essentially different classes does not.
It's going to breed resentment.
Something about that doesn't seem healthy.
Real quick, for sure. I know, too, that you talk about how different states have different rules when it comes to marriage and when it comes to divorce. And one of the things actually that brought me, because I came into this conversation a little more skeptical about prenups, but one of the things that brought me around the most was that you basically argue for the fact that we all have a prenup, even if we didn't sign one. And it's the divorce laws in our state. It's the default, essentially, that we're going to come up against no matter what. So, I don't know, it seems to me that coming up with our own bespoke prenup is this way to create a more fair set of rules than just kind of throwing caution to the wind, whatever my state dictates or whatever. Like, talk to us too about this. In many states, it can be like what the judge had for breakfast, how they're feeling that day, how they determines how they rule and how the assets get split
that
up.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, if we define a prenup for a moment, you know, a prenup is really just, it's a set of rules that dictates how your finances are treated, yes, in the event of divorce, but also during the marriage itself. But when it comes to, you know, the possible end of your marriage and the division of assets, you are signing up for whatever your state's laws happen to be. And if you move, your contract has changed. And very few of us, if any of us, read the quote-unquote contract, the default prenup, meaning the laws of your state as it pertains to your assets prior to getting married. Almost everyone only figured these things out in the context of a divorce. And so I think that there is real power in deciding what works for you and your spouse and your marriage based on where you are in your life, rather than accepting this kind of one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach. And you are putting yourself in the hands, potentially, of a judge who is randomly assigned to your case, who could have views on life and marriage and family and money very, very different from yours. And I have seen firsthand, you know, situations where you walk into one courtroom and one judge looks at the situation and says, well, you earned all the money and what did you do? So, yeah, you're going to get 80% of the assets. And you go to the very next courtroom down the hall and a judge says, I'm going to split everything in this case 50-50 no matter what. And that kind of uncertainty is just unnecessary when you can choose your own rules and kind of voluntarily commit yourself to a situation that you and your spouse personally agree to.
It makes a lot of sense. I think you're making a good case for it, Aaron. You know, like the ability to have rules that you know that you're playing by ahead of time. I think that can always be helpful. It makes me think of like sitting down to play one of the nerdy board games that we play, and then like all of a sudden halfway through the game, the rules shift. Well, that wouldn't be cool.
Yeah.
But being able to agree to a set list of rules, I guess, it makes a whole lot of sense. And we're going to continue talking here right after the break. We're going to ask you some more specifics about prenups, what it is that they govern, how they work. We'll get to all of that right after this.
And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
All right, we're back from the break. We're still talking about prenups, prenuptial agreements, and we've got expert Aaron Thomas with us here to dive into the details. And again, talked about this a couple times, something I've been a little skeptical of, but man, I really am kind of coming around as listening to Aaron talk and just reading his book has really kind of shown some light on the necessity of prenups in so many cases. But Aaron, I have this question for you. Does the process of getting a prenup, does it ever come back to bite couples, right? Because I guess part of my reason for not loving prenups as a way forward is, I don't know, maybe it starts off your marriage in this adversarial process. Is that like you're trying to protect what's yours? It could come across as selfish or erode trust in that relationship. Does just the act of getting a prenup ever kind of result in a failed relationship?
Yeah, I mean, great question. I think that a lot of it comes down to your approach, right? And I will be the first to concede that some of the bad reputation that prenups have is deserved, right? Because there are a lot of people who have used prenups to kind of solidify a disparity in wealth, to solidify a disparity in access to finances over the course of the relationship. You know, a prenup is really a contract like any other contract. There can be good terms that are, that are great for your relationship, or there can be bad terms that are a huge red flag. So a lot of it is in your approach. I think that, you know, if it is done as a collaborative process where you and your partner come together and sit down and talk about what do you want your financial marriage to look like? You know, should you be transparent on the front end? Should you both have equal access to money during the relationship? Do you both have a say in kind of spending and investment decisions? Can you agree what would be fair if, you know, God forbid, the relationship comes to end? Can we agree what would be fair while we love each other, while communication is high, while we trust each other? Then it can be a real positive for your relationship. If the only thing you're doing is protecting what you had from your spouse going in, then yeah, I can see that having a negative impact on your relationship. So, the devil's in the
details.
That's
when it seems like the terms are bad, right?
Yeah, right.
Because if it's only there to protect you, it seems fairly one-sided. But I guess, like, my thoughts are, if you can agree to these terms, then is it necessary to have them down in a contract? Because a lot of what you actually talk about in your book, just the actual prescription part of the prenup, are great things that we recommend for folks to do all the time, right? Like you're talking about making financial goals for yourselves. You're talking about how it is that you're going to achieve those things. It's establishing healthy communication. It's just that you are doing it inside the bounds of a contract as opposed to, I guess, just a conversation that, in my mind, feels less, I don't know, less loving. I guess when you think about it from the standpoint of counseling or goal setting or a couple's retreat, it's, to me, that seems more edifying as opposed to the contract.
Yeah. So I think there are a couple aspects to, you know, putting in writing that give it a marked benefit over just having the conversation. You know, one is it's legally enforceable, right? That may be obvious, but locking yourself the same way that you can kind of lock yourself in to, a disparity in net worth or wealth with a prenup, you can lock yourself into a fair situation as well and really kind of protect yourself against your future self or your spouse's future self. There are many people who would agree, yeah, you know, we're in this together. Everything we're doing is 50-50 on the front end. Unfortunately, you know, when marriages dissolve, people are no longer in that same headspace, and they're much more likely to act out of anger and think, that they should be, shooting for the majority of the assets. And there's also kind of this weird thing that I've noticed, even in, good relationships like mine, if you're in a relationship and each of you are doing 50% of the work, 50% of the labor in the relationship, it feels like you're doing 70% of the work, right? Because we only see what we ourselves are doing. You know, I don't see what my wife is doing when I'm not around. So it feels like I'm taking
it. Discount it, yeah.
Right,
you know,
right.
I did the dishes.
Right, but you didn't see me take out the trash. So, I think that there's, a protective mechanism there. And also, putting in writing, there's something about making it formal, making the process formal. One, you've got something you can look back on and say, hey, you know, we agreed, for example, that we're going to sit down, you know, once a year. We're going to make sure that we've disclosed all of our assets and debts and updates, and we're going to go through an agenda of things and talk about, you know, our spending from last year, and were there any surprises, and, you know, what do we want to plan for next year? Should we put away some money for travel, or is this year that we, you know, buy an investment property? And having that in writing reduces or eliminates any confusion about what you agreed to on the front end. But there's also the ceremony of it as well. You know, I mean, we do vows when we get married. We walk down and we pronounce what we want to do in front of everyone that we know. And there is real power in the ceremony of it, the same way as putting something down on paper and, you know, taking ink, you know, to the page and putting your signature on it and saying, this is what I'm willing to commit to in writing, that I think makes people want to stick to it. It gives them clarity, and they know that, you know, you can't go back on it. You can't change your mind. We've committed to this in writing, and it's going to be enforceable. Yeah.
Sense of protection as well, right, for both parties. You talked recently about Michael Jordan's prenup with his wife. I'm curious to hear, can you like tell us about that structure a little? But I also want to know, right, if you think that like normal folks, non-famous, non-wealthy people, do they need like a similar sort of prenup, or like, how should people think about that? I think the most famous stories are often ones of the rich and famous, but is that what our prenup should kind of look like too?
Yeah. So I will put this caveat out there that, you know, when people hear about the celebrity prenups, you know, that is part of what creates a lot of the misconceptions, because you're going to hear it and you're going to think this has nothing to do with me. You know, Michael Jordan has a prenup with his current spouse. He went through his first divorce with his first wife and paid out a settlement of $178 million, I believe.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And
I guess he's a billionaire. So we're talking in terms of percentages, still he's keeping the majority.
Still,
right?
A lot of money.
It is relative, but you know, $178 million is a pretty penny no matter what. And so with his current spouse, they have a prenup that says, you know, for the first, you know, 10 years of the marriage, if the marriage were to come to an end, she receives $1 million per year of the marriage. And if the marriage gets to the 10-year mark and goes beyond, then every year of marriage becomes worth $5 million. You know, people hear it and they may have some kind of visceral reaction to it. I think it is something that for them was probably fair. It probably works for them. Because Michael Jordan gets the knowledge that he is going to have, you know, the protection for his assets, which, you know, trying to value interests in Nike and, you know, NBA teams and clothing lines, mm-hmm, would be a nightmare disaster. I mean, you're talking about multi-year litigation that he'd be drawn up in, you know, regardless of the amount of payout that would eventually come. And for his wife, I think she gets some protection of knowing, you know, if anything happens, I'm going to receive enough money that, you know, I can take care of myself. You know, she is giving up, you know, kind of her privacy for life by being married to one of the most recognizable athletes on the planet.
Sure.
And, you know, other people may have their own, you know, views on, you know, how much it's worth. And it feels very, you know, so it can feel a little icky because it feels very economic. But it is something that for them gives them both a sense of security that they clearly wanted. And so while that kind of prenup is likely not going to work for you or me, it is something that I think does work for their situation.
Okay, let's talk about...
I don't want my wife getting hundreds of millions, you know? Like, although that's not going to happen. Like, I don't have that much.
Aaron, I wanted to talk about, I guess, the structure of prenups, because like they're not just about dividing up assets when the divorce papers are signed, right? Like there are other like non-compliance and trigger clauses. There are contingencies that you can include. Can you share some of the different examples?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I kind of look at it in three stages. You know, the first is kind of before the marriage. So that's the transparency aspect of putting everything down in a net worth statement. Then you have during the marriage. And then finally, you've got, you know, you could call it end of marriage. I call it like the contingency conversations, which might be a euphemism. But during the marriage itself, I think, you know, the first step is to talk about how you're setting up your bank accounts. And, you know, not the same thing isn't going to work for every couple, but what I recommend is having kind of three categories or three buckets of accounts: mine, yours, and ours. And sitting down and thinking through what qualifies as a joint expense for us. You know, so for most couples, their mortgage or their rent, their utilities, their grocery bill, the meals they eat out together, insurance, those things are going to fall, you know, pretty squarely into the hours bucket. And then there are things that, you know, I think can clearly fall into the separate buckets, you know, things that you could pay from your own spending money. So if I go, you know, out and have a meal with my buddies, and my wife's not there, that's something I would pay from my own expenses. What that does for a lot of couples today who are getting married later in life, you know that the joint expenses are being paid, but you also maintain some level of autonomy over your own spending and don't feel like every time you stop by Chick-fil-A is being scrutinized by your spouse because it's coming out of, you know, the joint bank account. And setting things up in that way, I think, can prevent a lot of arguments over things that are otherwise, you know, unnecessary. There's a couple different ways that people will do it. My wife and I do what's called the inside-out plan, where all of the income for the household goes into our joint account initially. And then we each get an allotment or a disbursement from that allowance, if you will, but it's equal amounts for both of us. That comes out of that joint account and goes into our separate accounts that we can spend, you know, without any oversight of our spouse. And I think that's helpful. You know, in my situation, it allows us to do some spending that our spouse might not agree with, you know, without having to worry about it. You know, like I like to get my daughter, you know, Nikes, even though she's going to outgrow them, you know, in 3 months. And my wife probably wouldn't spend the money on those kinds of shoes, but I get to do it because it came out of my money. And my wife has similar things that she would spend that I might see as, you know, potentially frivolous, but she can do it because she's spending it from her money. And then when it comes to the joint account, we have a rule that says neither one of us can spend more than $500 from the joint account without agreement from the other spouse. And, you know, some people say, oh, you got to get permission, you know, from your wife. And I don't look at it like that. I look at it as a mutual respect thing. You know, if I'm spending money from the joint account, that is something that impacts my wife. She needs to know about it. And, you know, rarely are we going to say no, but it is something that we've ingrained into our relationship, you know, this practice, this habit of communication that I think yields benefits in other areas of the relationship as well.
And that just makes sense. I mean, having those larger expenses is kind of like having a couple sets of keys or whatever to like to the nukes. You know, it's not just up to one person to make the decision. It's like this impacts a lot more folks, and we need to make sure that there's a review process here. We need to make sure everyone's on board
before
you simultaneously go over there and turn those keys at the same time. Yeah. I think that can be healthy for sure.
I think one of the other things, Aaron, that really kind of put me more on board with your argument was how much money a prenup can save you. So yeah, a prenup costs money on the front end and you got to go through that setup process. But from everything I've heard, divorce is just about one of the hardest things you can endure. And even if your marriage ends amicably, it can be a really difficult process, even if you're still remain friendly. But how bad can a divorce be for your finances? And like, we'll talk about lawyers' fees, stuff like that. And how much is that prenup, although it's, you know, cost some money in the beginning, how much could that potentially save you?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked this. You know, the cost of a prenup, you know, is usually going to be around a few grand. You know, my office does them for, you know, flat fee of $3,500, which is pretty standard. And a divorce case lasts on average a year. That was creeping up to closer to 18 months during the pandemic with some of the delays in the courthouses. Mm-hmm. And the average cost is $15,000 per spouse. That means a lot of people pay a whole lot more than that. So, you know, if you're talking about 30 grand for a couple, you know, and there are certainly cases that go into, you know, the hundreds of thousands. I've worked on a case before where just our client alone paid over $1 million in fees over the course of 4 years of litigation. And the way that it kind of works is the more money that you have at the time of the divorce, the more likely, you know, your divorce is going to be more expensive itself. Because if you think that, you know, taking your case to court can win you 2/3 of the assets instead of half, the more money you have, the more it's worth to spend that money on the lawyers to get you there. And so a lot of people, you know, this is important when it comes to, a lot of people say, well, I don't need a prenup because we don't have anything. Well, that's coming into the marriage. What makes the divorce expensive is what you've got on the back end, which you can't know, you know, until you get there.
And your goal is probably hopefully you're going to continue to
grow your net worth, and you will have actually more dollars.
Like, if you're taking a vow of poverty, then maybe you too don't need a prenup. But okay, another question for you on that front. So when we're talking about lawyers, typically an individual hires a lawyer to represent their interests. when we're talking about a couple who are going into this marriage, they have a lot of the same interests, but they also have individual things to protect. Do they each need to hire their own lawyer to get this prenup done?
So a lawyer can, yeah, a lawyer can only represent one side of a transaction. In most states in the U.S., it's not required that the second spouse hire their own lawyer, but they have to have had an opportunity to hire a lawyer. So that means, you know, not doing it at the last minute, making sure that there's money there for both people to hire their own attorney. Me personally, I will never discourage someone from having a lawyer on the other side of this kind of transaction, because you need to talk about, you know, what your fears are, you know, what keeps you up at night, you know, what worries you when it comes to, you know, making these kinds of decisions about what your financial life with your spouse looks like, and have somebody that can advise you just from your point of view. So certainly it should not be adversarial. You don't want to get into a situation where it's a lot of back and forth. You know, most of my clients will kind of, you know, waive their attorney-client privilege so that everything that I talk to them about is shared with their spouse, so everything's done out in the open. This ideally should be a collaborative process. You don't want, you know, you don't draft an agreement and hand it to somebody a week before the marriage. That's, you know, icky thing to do. It's not fair. And it's not the right way to start off a relationship that you hope will last forever. Legally,
sign this real quick right before you walk down the aisle. That's
right.
Not good.
Yeah.
According to your book, a judge might even deem that to be unconscionable.
Yes. A judge is likely to throw it out if you try to play that last minute game. Right. Anyway.
All right, Aaron, we got a few more questions to get to with you, including what if you're already married? There's such a thing as postnups. Should all of us married folks be considering that? We'll get to questions on that and more right after this.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
We are back from the break. We're talking about how prenups are for lovers. And we are talking with Aaron Thomas. Aaron, in your book, you devote an entire chapter, actually, to the title of that chapter was Tact, Timing, and Talk. And, you know, prenups, they can obviously be a touchy topic for a newly in love couple. But what are some ways that they could start talking about prenups without completely ending the relationship?
Yeah, great question. It's an important one, right? Because, you know, we know that if a lot of people go to their loved one and say, hey, babe, I want a prenup, the reaction might not be the most positive. And so, you know, the advice I give might be a little bit counterintuitive, but it is don't lead with the word prenup. I think we all can admit that word carries a lot of, you know,
a lot of weight.
It's kind of heavy. But instead, kind of leading with what it is that you want to accomplish. I have found that most people don't object to the terms of the prenup itself as much as they do the word prenup or the idea of a prenup. And so, you know, if you start with kind of the component parts, you know, I think that we should be transparent. I think that we should write down all of our assets and debts and share it with each other. I think that it's a good idea for us to decide how we want to set up our bank accounts and how the money's going to flow, you know, through our joint bank accounts and our separate bank accounts. I think we should have kind of some ground rules for spending and budgeting and saving. Can we agree that if either of us wants to go to counseling, that we're going to go to counseling, no questions asked? Can we agree on, you know, an annual meeting where we discuss and update each other on, you know, our financial lives and make sure that things are still working? Because you can't just set it and forget it for life, right? And then, yes, can we talk about, you know, God forbid, if things came to an end, can we agree what would be a fair way to, you know, have our money split up that we decide and that, you know, keeps us from spending a year or two in a courtroom slinging mud at each other and making lawyers rich instead of doing what is best for the two of us? And if you can agree on those kinds of things, then what you're talking about is really the same thing as getting a prenup, even if, you know, the word doesn't reflect that in your mind when you first hear it.
My wife and I can definitely agree on not making lawyers rich, by the way. That's something we can come together on.
as you're talking to a lawyer.
Right, I know. Sorry, Aaron.
Well, one of the things you talk about, too, is to do this sooner rather than later. You kind of touched on this earlier, but kind of explain why this is better to do essentially ahead of time as opposed to after the fact.
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons. You know, one is it is so much easier when you are talking about potential issues that could come up as a hypothetical. You know, it's much easier to say, okay, you know, can we agree that if family members ask for money, that, you know, we're going to limit it to $1,000, you know, as a contribution, and we both got to agree. Or spending limits, you know, from the joint bank account. Those are easy things to agree to, or easier when they are a concept rather than when something has, you know, has happened and it feels punitive because you're saying, oh, you spent $500, but from now on, you can't touch the joint account without my approval. That tends to be the wrong time to, you know, have these kinds of discussions. And given, you know, how important your financial life is to your marriage, I mean, I think you guys would probably recognize, given your industry, that, you know, the fights over money is one of, if not the biggest reasons that couples break up. And so, you know, being aligned when it comes to your finances is mission critical to the success of your marriage. And so this is something that has to be done with a lot of forethought. You've got to give it more time than you do the guest list for your wedding. You know, this deserves the kind of import that you would give any other major decision in your life, like starting a business or buying a home. If you agree that getting married is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make, then you've got to give it at least as much forethought.
All right. So let's talk to the folks out there who are currently married, right? And so neither Matt nor I, we have prenups in our marriages and with our wives. Is that something, like, it's called the postnup, right? So is that something that more people should be considering? And how do you approach that? Because that seems like it's maybe an even more delicate conversation, especially since we just, like, my wife and I just celebrated 13 years. That's a long time, kind of considering everything equal for ourselves. Do we need to put something down in writing? How do you talk to people who are currently married about this idea?
Yeah, there's a few instances when people will consider getting a postnup. You know, the first kind is kind of simple. You know, somebody who wanted to get a prenup, but they maybe got caught up in wedding planning, or they drug their feet a little bit and, you know, it snuck up on them. And so they are doing it after the date of the wedding. That's still, you know, considered a postnup. There are other situations where people, so to speak, read the contract of marriage years into their marriage, and they realize that they've been living a way that is different than the law would treat their finances. So, you know, there are couples who've gotten married and decided, okay, you know, I, you know, had a rental property coming in and you had a house coming in, and I'm going to pay for my property and you're going to pay for your property, and we're going to keep those things separate. And then they're married for a little while, and they recognize that a court is not going to honor that kind of informal agreement between the spouses, and they want to just go ahead and put it in place, or protect each other from debts, or when, you know, one spouse has a business and they want to make sure that that's kind of outside of the marital estate, both in terms of, you know, the value of it as well as the debts or potential liabilities of it. And there are some couples who, you know, they're on the ropes, and they want to give it another go, but they've had financial issues that are part of their problem, and they want to correct it with a prenup that defines, you know, kind of their access to money, so they're not in that kind of situation where one spouse makes 200 grand and the other one has a 300 allowance. They want to fix some of the problems that have gotten them to this space, while also saying, all right, if things don't work out, can we agree now what's fair while we've still got some communication and some trust alive, so that we don't end up in a situation like we've all seen some of our friends go through, where, you know, things devolve and all of a sudden they're not speaking to each other and everything is going through the lawyer and those hourly rates are starting to stack up, not to mention the impact on kids and family and your lives and the stress and everything else that comes from it.
So better to do it ahead of time, but better late than never, it sounds like, is what you're saying, Aaron. So there seems to be more cost-effective ways to actually go about getting a prenup these days. Are prenups just generally more accessible? Are they just easier to facilitate? Have laws changed? Or is it because different services are coming around like yours, right, where folks can easily find a prenup attorney? It's like somebody who specializes in the creation of these. I would love to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah. I mean, I think you nailed it with that last one, where because they have risen so much in popularity and people are more interested in getting them, there are a lot more attorneys who are starting to specialize in them. You know, before, you know, 15 years ago, the average family law attorney would probably do 50 to 100 divorce cases for every one prenup that they would do. And so they just weren't seen as very profitable. You know, you make a lot more money off of a divorce than you do off of a prenup. And people just didn't have a lot of experience with them. So it took people longer to give people what they wanted. And over the years, we've started to figure out, you know, what are the best ways to help couples set up their finances? And what are the kinds of things that couples want to see in their agreement, so we can do it a lot more efficiently? And as a result, it's a lot more accessible to people.
All right. Question. So I know on some things like a will, right? You could hand write a will and you don't even necessarily have to have it notarized as long as you have a couple witnesses, right? And then that will is legally enforceable, right? You can submit that in a court of law. There's a lot of nuance to that, I know. But like, could you do the same with a prenup? Is it possible? Do you need necessarily the services of a lawyer? And I don't want to sound overly cheap, but I guess I'm curious to know, like, have you seen people DIY a prenup, write it down in like magic marker on construction paper, and have that actually work out for them? Or is it like, no, you definitely need a third party to help you figure this out?
Yeah. I, you know, during my legal career, you know, I've probably done more than 1,000 divorce cases, and I've seen plenty of DIY prenups, and they're almost always legally insufficient, unenforceable. Oh, okay. So, you know, I think one of the differences with a prenup and a will is, you know, if your will is written poorly, you can always redo it later. Whereas, you know, you get one shot to do the prenup correctly. I mean, yes, you can get a postnup later on down the line, but the problem is a lot of people don't know that it's not enforceable until they need to actually enforce it and they're in front of a judge. Mm. And so it's risky. You know, I don't want to pay lawyers. I'm a lawyer myself, and I don't want to pay lawyers any more than I have to. But when I need something done correctly, then I, you know, I go hire a lawyer myself that is an expert in that thing. You know, you can, you know, if you want to do some of the legwork, you can read the book and learn kind of some of the steps to make it easier for the lawyer that you approach. Or if you draft something on your own, I think you would be well advised to at least take it to an attorney, pay that attorney for 1 hour of their time and tell them to look it over and make sure that the basics have at least been covered.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. Get that professional review at the very least, Joel. Don't just scribble it down on a Chick-fil-A napkin. But okay, Aaron, last question for you. As a divorce lawyer, aside from getting a prenup, what is your best piece of advice, in your opinion, to keep a marriage healthy, to keep it alive and growing and just thriving, basically?
Yeah, yeah. I've given a lot of thought to this myself because I am a lawyer who desperately wants to stay married myself. And, you know, there's a lot of debate over like what causes the most breakdowns in relationships. Some people say it's money. Some people say it's infidelity. I think that, you know, at its core, the root cause of most divorces is a breakdown in communication. That leads to the erosion of trust. It leads to secrecy. And so creating kind of a framework for your relationship where communication is your default, whether it's about expenses, whether it's about going to therapy, whether, you know, it's about, you know, what your needs are in your family life. You know, you can't go wrong with putting an emphasis on communication in your marriage.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, it's a good way to wrap things up.
Spoken Aaron, like a happily married man right there.
Yeah. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. Where can our audience, where can they go find out more about you, more about creating a prenup that makes sense for them?
Yeah, if you want to learn more, you can check out my website. It is prenups.com. There's lots of free resources, you know, free ebook on there. And obviously, you can go to Amazon and you can get my new book, The Prenup Prescription, which goes into much more detail.
That's right. Awesome. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me on. It's been an honor.
All right, Matt. That was a really interesting convo with Aaron Thomas talking about a topic that you and I were probably reticent to touch in a lot of ways. And when people have asked us in the
we've touched on it before in the past, but we haven't, I guess, taken it on this straightforward, this head on.
And most of the time when we get asked about it, we're a little more hesitant to say it's a good idea. Like we want to kind of, we realize it is a necessity for some folks, but it's also something that we hesitate to be like, give the Joel and Matt How to Money seal of approval. I guess what was your big takeaway from this combo?
There's a lot, I guess, that I'm thinking of right now. But as you're talking, I guess what comes to mind is the fact, I think one of the reasons I've been hesitant personally is it is difficult for me to say, oh, yeah, this is a great idea, even though I personally don't do that, right? And so even though I know that there are situations.
Didn't do it, but.
Oh, I didn't, and I still don't think I will, though. That's the thing. Like, even after talking with him, will Kate and I go and get a post-nup? I don't think we will. But that doesn't mean that it's not right for some folks, right? Yeah. At the root of a lot of what he's basically talking about, at the end, he talked about communication. And so much of what he is discussing and so much of what goes into a prenup is actual communicating. It's figuring out those goals. It is, well, if this happens, what happens then? It's essentially it's budgeting, right? Like he's talking about, oh, I've got my money, she's got her money, and we have our money, the joint money. And he's talking about the freedom he has to be able to go out with some friends or buy some Nikes for his daughter.
But it's adding a layer of legal protection.
Yes, but there are ways that you can do that within a budget. Like that's budgeting. That's coming up with a plan for your money. But like you said, yes, it puts it within the framework. It puts it within the package of it being legally enforceable.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I've come around, and I totally, even though I did not get a prenup, I think it is something I would suggest people strongly think about. And I think the biggest two reasons are the fact that it can save you a lot of money and a lot of heartache on the back end of things if things don't go as you hope and plan. And the other thing is just that you kind of have a prenup based on your state laws. And those state laws are different all over the place. And, you know, whether it's a community property state or whether you live in a state where a judge gets to kind of decide the details of how things are divvied up, you might prefer to have some say over that on the front end than leaving it to chance. So I guess I have kind of come around to kind of Aaron's way of thinking on this one. My biggest takeaway, though, was on approach. And if you're going to talk about having a prenup, so much you're getting married to this person because you love them, and so you need to approach a conversation about a prenup with care and with love. And so if you're going to have this conversation, if you're going to go in this direction, certainly make sure you're treating that person. You're not being defensive, being selfish, trying to protect yourself. You're trying to protect both parties in this whole endeavor.
Yeah. And you said it's helpful to not use the word prenup.
Yeah.
But instead to focus on the goals and, again, just all the other things that you're trying to accomplish with the prenup, but maybe don't necessarily lead with
right.
the term prenup, which can be such a loaded term. But yeah, awesome. Let's get back to the beer then. You and I enjoyed a Southern Hemisphere. This is a Pilsner by Second Street Brewery. What are your thoughts on this one?
This one was clean, light, and fluffy is what I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah.
So I...
slightly on the bitter side. Like, yeah. I feel like some Pilsners are either slightly neutral or maybe even a tiny bit sweet, whereas I feel like this one, it kind of leaned slightly more in that... in that bitter side.
Yeah.
That being said, I just had a sweet apple on my walk right after lunch, and so I was wondering, is this having an impact on how I perceive this beer?
Yeah.
Perhaps. But
it's got some biscuity vibes going on, I'll say, too.
Very refreshing. Great one. This is another beer that was donated to the show by Bob out there in New Mexico. So, again, thank you so much for sending this one our way.
Yeah. Appreciate you, Bob.
Is that going to be it for this episode?
That'll do it. We'll put links in our show notes up on our site at howtomoney.com, including a link to Aaron's book. If you're like, I want a deep dive on this subject now, this nerdy legal topic of prenups, we'll put that up there on the site. But Matt, that's going to do it for this one. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.